Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. This week, Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockage are recapping the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight and previewing the Final Four. Keep an eye on that feed Sunday morning as the guys will be cracking the mics early to look back on the Final Four and to preview Monday night's national championship game. Listen to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, America's Caddy on ESPN Plus is hosted by my man Michael Collins, the quick-witted longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, and part celebrity hangout but full of laughs. Streaming now on ESPN Plus. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Y'all know what this is. Foxworth Friday. Foxworth Friday. Yeah, we sound like a bunch of white people clapping right now, right? Clapping on a different beat. Why are you clapping on the 7? You know what I'm saying? It's just the technology. And all it is, man, what's going on with you?
Nothing, man. Having fun. You catching me fresh off of Get Up, lighting up people because everybody is wrong about everything except for me. I got to bring a different energy to this show. I have my Get Up energy on. I got to get my Right Time energy.
Oh, no. There is nothing like when you are the only person saying something and you and I are both people that can recognize that we are not always right. Somebody else might be wrong. You know, but there's nothing like when you're the only person saying something and everybody's acting like you wrong, and you know damn well that they the ones that's wrong.
I mean, there's a lot of times doing this job, I look around, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm talking about football, and like, and especially in the off season where we're just trying to manufacture storylines, and I'm like, but when I get these moments, when I can see the future, and everybody is stuck in the past, oh, that is the glory of the job.
Man, I tell you, during Tebow Mania, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Tebow Mania took time off my life, man, because it was just, I just couldn't believe all the things. And I'd say the first time after the game in Miami, right, where one of the players told me he was one of the Dolphins. I was like, so what'd you think of Tebow? He's like, worst quarterback I ever saw. He's like, yeah, we lost. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, throwing away from that, but worst quarterback I ever saw. So I'm doing around the horn. It was Woody Page, Bob Ryan, and Tim Collishaw. And we were going around. Of course, Woody Denver, right? Mm-hmm. And then Collishaw was on the he's not good, but, you know, a little optimism after seeing it. And Bob Ryan was on the, yeah, you know, I guess he could be a starting quarterback. And they got to me and I just was so confused by everything I had heard. And I was just like, he's the worst quarterback I've ever seen. And every week I was getting on TV being driven crazy because everybody kept talking themselves into it, right? Because they were winning games. And I just remember just sitting there every week just like, oh, I can't believe this. I just cannot.
So you didn't enjoy it, or did you enjoy it in that first moment when you was like, I got this, and then it just got like wearying as it went along, or the whole time it was exasperating?
I was so confused at first, but then it kept going. Like, the last thing I expected is that they would win 8 games with him as quarterback. Like, that was the thing. Like, it got long enough or far enough in at one point that I was like, oh, they're going to beat the Vikings. Like, I remember that game. I was like, yeah, they'll beat the Vikings. It's the only time I ever picked them to win, because how could you ever pick them to win? They had Tim Tebow at quarterback. And just every week, I was the one guy that was like, no, this is wrong. He stinks, guys. You can't see that?
And so that's what I mean. Like, were you tired of it, or you just like, it's going to come?
Oh, I was tired.
But you never got the moment, because it never, when it finally comes around to you being right, no one ever calls you up like, hey, my bad.
Well, I got the moment because they got beat by like 30-something by the Patriots. But when they beat the Steelers.
On that slant. Oh, game-winning touchdown.
He threw like 300 yards in that game, too. The worst game of Dick LeBeau's life. Our man Ryan Clark couldn't play that game because of the altitude and the sickle cell and everything. Ike Taylor, man, picked a great day to have the worst day of his life. But that happens from time to time, man. But I just want to know, are you excited for Week 18 NFL action that will be coming to us this year?
No. Like, I understand it, like, from a capitalism standpoint, and I even can get past, as crazy as it sounds, the health and safety implications. But what drives me nuts about this is, and I'm sure you'll understand this given that you're an economist, is the people who are going to be bearing the brunt of the 17th game, the people who are going to have their careers shortened, the people who are going to make less money over the course of their careers, and the people who are going to have the quality of their life impacted because of the 17th game are not going to be the people who reap the benefits. So when you say 17th game, the NFL is just greedy, the reply that most people give is, well, it's going to increase the salary cap, so the money's going to go to the players too. It's true. That is a fact. But the way that the salary cap works is you have to become a free agent to access that money. And you also have to be a highly coveted free agent in order to like extract a great deal of value. So the quarterbacks, the ones who like the 18th or the 17th game is not going to impact them that much physically, and superstar players, their salaries are going to go through the roof. While the guys who are trying to get to their pension, which is 3 and 3 is what we call it on the inside, is like you got to get the 3 years and 3 games, then you get to the pension. Those guys are going to miss out on that. Like plenty of guys are not going to make it to that point. Not even to getting their pension, let alone getting a free agency because of the addition of this game. And that's the part that bothers me. Like, I wish that they announced this with some other mechanism that ensured these type of players would be fairly compensated.
Well, the most disingenuous thing to me is the league trying to make the argument that by going to 17 regular season games and 3 preseason games rather than 16 regular season games or 4 preseason games. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, that 20 game number in total has been consistent for a long time. Like back when it was a 14 game schedule, they played 6 preseason games. Jeez. Back then.
Probably actually played in them too.
Yeah, that sounds awful, right? And so that's the thing for me is that Goodell's trying to make the argument that by extending the season, that the science, that's the big broad term, the science indicates that there will be fewer injuries. But the question is, who were the people who were getting injured in the preseason and who the guys are that are actually playing these games? Because most of the guys playing these preseason games are never going to make a roster. They're never going to get to what that 17th game is anyway. The starters, they're not actually playing in those games. So you're just adding a game for them to play where they would have been out there for a quarter max otherwise in this. And they're like, well, the injuries will go down. Let me tell you this, and I think this gets forgotten. If Eric Fisher does not tear his Achilles, the Chiefs probably win the Super Bowl, I think. Like, I think it mattered that much, losing the left tackle, that if he doesn't tear his Achilles, the Chiefs probably win the Super Bowl. All adding an extra game is going to do is guarantee that we're going to have more people get hurt. And by the way, more people that matter in right. the postseason, more people that matter for the games that are good. And so I look at it when they decided to do this. I'm like, there's no way that this can make the product better. It just makes the product more available. But there's no argument one can make that this improves the product itself.
Yeah, no, that's good. Because I was approaching it from my union standpoint. And you're right. I hadn't even considered, like, I look at it like more games isn't always better because obviously we got basketball and baseball where it feels like I can miss a quarter of the season or half of the season and I'd be fine. So I didn't necessarily consider like how the injuries, who will get injured, how much that matters. And you're right. And to your point about Patrick Mahomes, I was looking at some numbers last night in preparation for some shows today. I saw Patrick Mahomes is an above average quarterback, like to good quarterback under pressure, which is mind-blowing. And so then I think back, like, why did the things not work out in the Super Bowl? It's because it was coming from every direction. And that's why your point about a quality left tackle, like, yeah, that man could have rolled left and made something happen. He couldn't roll nowhere.
Yo, I can't imagine what it had to be like. You know what it had to feel like for him in that Super Bowl? Fight Mike Tyson on Mike Tyson's punch out. Like, I know there's a bunch of kids that have never, like, you have to understand, there's never been a boss at the end of a video game like Mike Tyson. Like, the first time you get out there with Mike Tyson, you just standing there, and the 7 seconds in, Mike Tyson throws this uppercut, and it's over. You might be able to get up if you hit the buttons fast enough or whatever it is. Mahomes is getting the ball, and then immediately the wave was on him.
I remember when I heard that my uncle could beat Mike Tyson, and I begged my mom to take me over there so mm-hmm. I could just watch him do it. I watched him do it. He was a lot older than me. I was probably like 8 at the time. He went to jail 2 weeks later. Oh. But he beat Tyson.
Yeah, I got to say, man. I mean, he went in on a high note. Like, keep it real. I beat Mike Tyson once, and I never played that damn game ever again.
Oh, you beat him. I never beat him.
007-373-5963, baby.
Oh, man.
They know it. Streets know it. Streets know it. But no, the league, like, I was with you there also, but talking about, like, the union parts, that's real, though, man. I imagine you probably noticed this in talking to fans about this, is that people act like the stars in the league are the median players. Like, the majority of the players in the NFL are just dudes trying to figure out how to get as much of this money as they possibly can. Make $500,000 a year at first. You know, they might get into a little bit of money on the back end. They're not rich in the ways that I think that people assume, and they're still taking these miles. Like, I was thinking about it. I don't know if you know my man, Mike Wright, who works for the NBA.com now. He's working at ESPN, and he was a big-time high school football player. And he was talking about in high school how happy he was when they lost in the playoffs because he was in such pain. And that's high school, right? Like, that's your body at its peak recovery period playing also against other high school players. That ain't what we talking about in the league.
High school and college matter because people have real injuries and tear their ACLs and tear meniscus, tear up the hip, get these things reconstructed. And if you do not make it to 3-3 and get that pension, then you don't have even the 5 years of healthcare after you're done playing, and you don't have access to a reimbursement account for surgery. So, like, you're going to have a knee replacement. You might have to have a hip replacement at some point when you tear up all the ligaments and cartilage in those joints. You ain't got no money to pay for that. Them things is expensive. You ain't got no insurance to pay for that. And if you didn't make it to pension years, you certainly don't got, you played at college, then of course there is no pension. There's no workers' comp. There's no nothing because you're a volunteer, essentially. And then you play in the league for 3 years and they cut you before you get to your fourth, then there's no money to pay for that either. All the money that we talked about last week, like, you got to have that money to pay for it. You got to find another job that got some good bennies in it, because otherwise, those hundreds of thousands of dollars, you going to have to drop 50 of them on these replacements.
Right. Your whole career is a pre-existing condition, right?
Exactly.
And let me tell you something about surgery right fast, okay? I have had 3 surgeries in my life. I had a knee surgery when I was 15. I had my wisdom teeth taken out when I was 16. And I had this little thing that I did to my ear a month ago, give or take. Let me tell you something that I didn't fully realize about this. Parents are paying for that stuff before. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man, I be getting these emails. You have a new billing statement. I'm like, damn, I got another one? Damn, y'all want another $1,000? Like, I got to go for these follow-ups, you know, with all of this stuff. I really had no idea, because, you know, at this point, it wasn't a thought, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And by the way, when you go get a surgery or whatever, they run through the prices with you, but they not really. It ain't like when you go buy a car, you can be like, yo, that price is kind of high for the power windows.
Yeah, I can crank these. No, I can't crank my knee surgery, bro.
Right. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'll look at this and I'll come back with a counter. No, there is none of that, right? But I got enough. I was like, I thought I was done paying for this. Like, it's been a month. Why am I still being asked to pay more money for what this is? And you're right. They need replacements, all this stuff. And it ain't no fun to recover from. Orthopedic surgery is carpentry.
This is fresh in my mind because one of my best friends from college had both his knees real messed up in college and a shoulder messed up in college playing. He's a really good player. He's closing in on 40 now. And the doctors are talking about it's time to do that. It's time to address some of these concerns because arthritis is getting tough for him to bear. And he's going to have to pay for that out of his pocket because the insurance is like pre-existing conditions. He might be able to get some insurance coverage. But then you brought up the rehab. Like, the rehab is important. You got to get out of work. Like, whatever job you got to get out of work to do rehab. Like, all this stuff compounds. And I don't know, this is not the Feel Sorry for Professional Athletes podcast, but it is the real life. Like, it's not what you think it is.
No, it's a lot of miles. And I compare, like, what athletes generally and football players specifically end up dealing with in a way to what it was like for me going to grad school. Because to me, grad school was just more college, right? Like, I just thought that we were going to go to school some more. Like, I went to high school. That wasn't that hard. I went to college. That wasn't that hard. How hard could grad school be? And the answer was harder than a $50 job break. Hard as penitentiary steel. My God. I've been good. And my grades weren't necessarily always good, but I was always good. No, grad school is harder than anybody can, especially if you're doing like a PhD. It's harder than anybody can tell you that it is. And people did try to tell me going in, it's going to be different. Just you see, yeah, whatever. And so I always feel like young guys, when they get into playing football, you don't know what is going to be on the back end, right? And even now, I think people have more information about what is going to be on the back end. But you 17, 18, even 21, You're like, yeah, no, I mean, how bad could it be? It could be really bad.
Yeah, you got to be specific, though. You said grad school. You mean PhD, because I went to grad school. It wasn't hard.
No, the PhD game. Because you know what? In fairness, I did a master's at first. And yeah, the classes that were hard were the PhD type PhD track classes, right? Like, yeah, it was a couple monsters. Like, that financial managerial accountant class I took at Claremont, I couldn't understand how accountant could be that hard.
Accountant is unnecessarily complicated, though.
Like, yo, put this in that column, this in that column.
Yeah, like, yeah. That you call it weird stuff. It's like credits and debits, and you can do different types. The craziest part is, like, businesses do different types of accounting to, like, achieve different types of goals. And, like, I didn't do the type of accounting that you did. I just did regular accounting. And I was like, this is unnecessary. How much money y'all making? How much money y'all spending? They're like, right, nah, we don't count these cost of goods sold until we actually sell the goods. Like, but you already bought the products that you need to make it. So that's gone out. Nope, that's still in here officially. It's still, like, it's just unnecessarily complicated.
Well, yeah, accounting is a bunch of, well, right? Like, yeah, everything in accounting is a bogus explanation, right? Like, hold on. This is how much money you got right here. Why is this how much money you got on this piece of paper? Like, I don't understand how this thing works. Like, so the second somebody owes you money, I'm supposed to act like I got the money, even though I can't spend the money.
I mean, I told you grad school wasn't hard. Finance was the only, like, accounting was fine. I took some classes before I actually started grad school. So, like, accounting wasn't too bad, and stats and all this stuff wasn't too bad. But finance, boy.
Yeah, finance was a monster. Like, finance was the one undergrad class, and I was all the way out of motivation. Like, my best friend had died April of my junior year, and it took me a good couple years to shake that off. And then first semester senior year, I took finance, and that was the one where I was like, yo, it's 2-0 and go, baby. Like, if I get this C, that's all I need. I ain't never going to be doing this stuff. It ain't never going to happen. Yeah, C's get degrees. Yeah, I never had to have that attitude until that finance. Nah, finance was a whopper.
I had that attitude all the time because C's did get degrees, and studying film gets that cheese. So that was my motto at University of Maryland. I graduated early. I was like, I'm going to graduate, but I'm also going to be getting to this paper as quickly as possible.
Yeah, man. But I think, like, for them guys, you talk about that pain. There's no way at, like, 17, 18 that you think about having your knees replaced. That's just not in the context of your thoughts.
Yeah, not that anybody should feel sorry for me, but, like, I talking to my mom and dad yesterday, and I got them a little Peloton treadmill. And my mom was telling me the workouts she do, and then my dad was telling me the workouts that he does. And I'm like, yeah, I could do those too. But if I get on the treadmill for too long, my knee and my back hurt. And I'm telling this to my father, who was in his early 60s. And he's like, oh, that's a damn shame, son. You're 63. Like, and I can afford to take care of these things. Like, whenever I have to have some surgeries because some replacements or whatever, like, I'll be fine. But when you were talking about those bills, man, I'm going to have them. Like, if my body feels worse than my dad's after I'm done working out and he's 63, and, like, I got out early and fairly pretty healthy. Like, I can't imagine how some of these other guys feel. And I was thinking about this earlier when you were talking about those bills. I got kids, man. And my wife has Crohn's disease. So the medical bills don't stop at my house, man. Them things, they be popping up all the time. Three kids?
Yeah, dog. I misunderstood what insurance meant. You know what I'm saying?
Insurance means we help you out a little bit.
Yeah, no, I thought I was good. You know, $10 copay. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going there. Like, I thought I was good. I still, hey, and maybe I need to look a little closer and make sure that they're not overcharging me. Like, I'm taking a lot of faith in the fact that the man is being honest with me when they send me these bills. But I'm like, damn, $994. I just sent y'all $1,500 and I sent y'all 2G. I've been sent, damn.
Make sure you check those bills, because my wife has caught at least 5 different times. She done caught people trying to charge her for something that we shouldn't have been charged for. But yeah, check them bills. They be slipping them in there.
Because I be looking at the statements and I'm like, okay. And then they show me the insurance is taking out a portion and all this. And I'm just kind of like, damn, whatever happened to the $10 copay? Like, I thought I should just walk out of here, put a 10 on the table and keep it moving. Incorrect, my dude. Incorrect. I just totally misunderstood. And then a lifetime of that. And then that's before we talk about just life stuff.
Oh, God. I feel you. That's all. I'm getting stressed out thinking about all the times where I open up my email and it's like the third time I got a bill for a sleep study for one of my kids or their tonsils coming out. Like, didn't we just do this? Don't I got insurance? What are we doing?
Well, I almost want to tell them, like, yo, man, I got it, dog. Give it to me all at one time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Why do they keep doing that, though? Like, it's stuff that come later. Like, I don't know. I'd rather just get it out the way. That's why I be thinking of scams. And I told you my wife done caught about 5 of them. I think the rest of them is because, like, I'm just too lazy and I get the bill first and I just pay it.
Yeah.
She look at it and like, let me call somebody and figure this out.
That's something that you mentioned that's interesting about when you mess around and get some money. That, like, at that point, you just be like, okay, cool, I got it. I just go ahead and give you the money, and then we'll work this out. Like my willingness to pay always had to do with ability.
That is 100% true. Like, I get mad, but I ain't gonna do nothing.
Yeah.
It was different. If it meant I was gonna have to make so, I had this funny time. Second year in the league, like, I was in Denver. I went to Vegas almost as much as I could, and I had a little bit of money, so I would bring my brother and my friends out there sometimes, and they would get a little carried away because they was hanging with me and some other NFL guys. And I remember headed back to the airport, and my brother was having a ball the whole time. This first time I saw him sad, headed back to the airport, I was like, you just mad that we're leaving? He was like, nah, I went a little too hard on the blackjack table, and I'm had to figure some things out on this flight home. My man said, I'm going to have to figure some things out. That, he ain't asked me for no money. I ain't offer none. Apparently, he figured it out.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. Well, let me know if you need some ideas.
Yeah, I just flew him to Vegas, put him up in a hotel room, paid for all the bottles and everything. Like, man, this was your choice. You done went further.
Like, bottles you wasn't even drinking.
Yeah, I was at the time. I wasn't right now, though. I crushed me a bottle at the club. Or yeah, I wasn't even drinking it. I was just getting the bottles because that's how I could get a couch and I need to sit down. Full circle, back to these damn knees.
Yo, that's my dilemma about the whole table culture and everything else as a person who doesn't drink is, there's a limit to whose drinks I'm willing to pay for. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm willing to pop for just about anything. I'll pop for the room. I'll pop for the meal. I'll pay for everybody, right? Because, like, honestly, I don't have much better to do with this than spend it on my friends. I really don't. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need stuff. It brings me more happiness to, like, have a crew around. And the thing that people didn't realize also that the NBA dudes, they're like, yo, why you got a posse and paying for everything? Because I'm the only person with money, fool. If I want to hang out with these dudes, either we going to be at Applebee's or I'm going to be paying for all this stuff, right?
Yep, this is exactly right.
This is the only way to do it. Like, your move needs to be, I used to have a friend, her daddy had money. And whenever we go somewhere, I let her pick the restaurant because I knew she was going to pick some shit I couldn't afford. And she knew I couldn't afford.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, I was cheating, though. On most of the Vegas trips, like, Champ would gamble enough that he could get many free rooms as he wanted. I'd be like, yeah, I'm bringing my cousin and my brother. Can you get them some rooms? He'd get them some rooms. And I might pop for a flight or something. And then we go to the club and he get a couple big tables or something. And, like, I'm gonna put something on that. Nah, we got these tables. I only went out there by myself a couple times, and I was like, "This ain't it. This is hella expensive." Because he was gambling enough that they would give him tables. I wasn't gambling like that.
Yeah, and he Chad Bailey.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I mean, even it only has a cachet because he had the money behind it. Like, it's Las Vegas. It's not Denver. Being Champ Bailey in Denver, like, get whatever you want. Being Champ Bailey in Vegas, like, they give tables away to people because those people bring more people and make their place fly.
Yeah.
Champ, even as good as he was, I mean, wasn't nobody like, oh, Champ Bailey's in the club tonight?
Yeah, you're like, it ain't Dion.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, Dion is not an entertainer. Like, I remember I told you the story New Year's Eve when we went out there and we were between Lisa Ray and her husband, who was like the president.
Turks and Caicos.
Yeah. And on the other side of us was Britney Spears, and it was 2005. To 2006. It was prime Britney Spears. So, like, that's the type of people that they're talking about that they might have given a free table to a leader of a country and the biggest pop star in the world. They're not giving it to the best corner that ever lived because nobody lining up like, hey, you heard Champ was in the club tonight. Not in Vegas. Maybe in Denver, but not in Vegas.
Now, the problem is, like, Champ be on the club flyer in a city that don't got no dot being like, hi, I'm Champ Bailey. Come party with me and my celebrity friends.
That's for sure.
And my celebrity friends is the best. Like, that's how you know the first dude ain't that hot. And that's how you know them next dudes are not celebrities.
You got to use your imagination. Anybody can come.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, I want to switch gears a little bit with you. We're now in pro day season, and I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about this, but to me, the pro day is the SAT. Everybody studies up for the test, basically, and it has little to no actual bearing on anything else that is going to happen. Like, it was funny. Mike Golding Jr., I did Highly Questioned with him the other day, and he talked about Fields and Wilson. He's like, I'm glad to see everybody is scripting in the viral pass, right? The roll left, throw right off the wrong foot, 60 yards type thing. And I was like, oh, no. That is not new. I'm old enough to remember when Kyle Bowler got himself drafted in the first round by throwing the ball through the goalpost from his knees from the 50-yard line, which to this day remains the most impressive thing that guy ever did.
Yeah, I think Orlovsky told me that was the most impressive pro day pass that he had ever seen, and made the connection also, like, y'all need to chill out on this Zach Wilson stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. Dude, Jamarcus Russell comes up. I remember him throwing from his butt in the end zone like 80 yards, and everybody's like, oh, there we go. So yeah, it's all nonsense.
Yo, Jamarcus Russell might have the strongest arm that I've ever seen. Like when you look back at it, Jamarcus Russell was bigger than Jadeveon Clowney and could move. There's a whole long list of things that happened with him where it fell apart. You know, a lot of it was personal. You know, there's no easy way to put it. But man, I understand why somebody thought it could happen. I didn't think it would. Like, even in college, I'm like, I don't think it would. But that dude looked like a superhero out there.
Yeah, I mean, I could get fooled by it too, but that's the point. It's like, we all say the pro day doesn't matter. And if you ask any scouts, they'll be like, oh yeah, pro day's not a big deal. But they're lying. It has some subconscious impact on them. That's the only way you could explain some of this stuff. It's like, it has some impact on the way that they view these players, because that's the only way you can explain some of the choices that they make and the decisions that they're made. Is like, they're influenced by that stuff. And I know that 40 time matters depending on your position. Like, that was the biggest thing I did. It wasn't even at my pro day. It was at the combine. I did the combine 40. So then when I showed up at my pro day, I wasn't doing nothing. Like, I'm the dude who ran a 4.35 at the combine. I'm good. I'm not lifting nothing. I'm not jumping nothing. I'm not doing no drills. I'm going to walk around and chat with the coaches.
You went up there and you put up the 14.50 on your SAT.
Exactly.
So specifically, I'm applying to engineering programs and I just put up a 780.
And that stuff sticks with you. Like, the 40 time sticks with you. If you go into anybody's like draft room where they have a list of players that they're looking at for free agency, your 40 time is next to you, even though you can't run it no more.
Because you're not studying for the test.
Yeah, exactly. But that is still next to you. And they still think of you as a 4.3 guy, a 4.5 guy. Like, that impacts your career.
Yeah, it's not as valuable as it was back when Al Davis was around. Oh, like, I feel like Al Davis was getting everybody money because you knew. What was that dude? He signed, actually, that Tywan Jones dude, I think is like, it's him or another one. But I think, or maybe it was Fabian Washington. I can't remember which. But one of them dudes that all he had was a 40 time. That was the only thing, and everybody knew he'll be a Raider. And both of those guys I listed were Raiders.
Yep, Fabian. So Fabian had me thinking I was slow. I was working out with Fabian to get ready. I love Fabe. We still close. We play together in Baltimore. But I was working out with him. We had the same agent, so we were working out the same place. And we'd be running 40s, doing all these drills. And like, I just knew I was fast when I got there. Then I was running with him, and he was running a 4.2.
That's absurd.
Yeah, a 4.2. And I was like, huh. And like, we weren't timing ourselves. We were just doing drills together. And I was always like a little hits behind. I was like, this, what happened? This training ain't working out. And then we went to the combine and that boy ran a 4.2. And I was like, oh, that's what happened.
I got no idea if that dude could cover. I don't know anything about him as an actual real live football player. All I knew was he ran, because he went to Nebraska, I think. He ran a time where it was like, you'll be playing for the Raiders.
To this day, he tried to convince me that Nebraska ain't give him nothing. Like, you are from Bradenton, Florida.
Oh.
You know, you had to jump over the entire SEC and ACC to go to Nebraska. How much did they pay you? He still loves the black shirts, right? That's what they call that defense.
Yeah, the black shirts.
He still rep for him. He said they ain't give him no money. So I take his word for it, I guess. But if that's the case, I wouldn't have gone to Nebraska. Y'all don't have to give me something to go way
yeah,
out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, not for free. Like, I'm trying to think for my job I got right now. What would y'all have to pay me if they're like, yo, we moving the office to Nebraska? But not, would you not, though? I'm not moving my office to Nebraska. Y'all got to sweeten this up.
That's for sure. Now, when I first was getting into this business, Fox offered me pretty much twice as much as what ESPN offered me. And I mentioned to my wife, and she looked at me like I was crazy. And LA's a wonderful city, but that ain't enough to get us to leave the family.
Like, and what's always interesting about Nebraska is, even like as the time went on, they're still always able to get like one or two guys that are not local but are really good on the strength of being Nebraska. And I just need to know what the hell was going on them visits. You know what I'm saying? Like, what did y'all provide?
I mean, it might be like coach connections, because like when coaches have a great connection with a high school coach in these like football factory high schools, like that ends up happening a lot. Like Coach Loxley, now the head coach at University of Maryland. It's not a coincidence that everywhere he has gone,
DC to come with him.
Oh, all the best DC, Maryland, and Virginia athletes, like in this little DMV tri-state situation, they are going to Illinois. Oh, all of a sudden they all in New Mexico. Whoa, Alabama got them now.
So, I remember that year that he brought them all with him to Illinois. It was what Regis Ben, Martez Wilson, and I forget who the other one was. And it was just
Went out there.
Yeah, Vontae went out there.
It's craziness. If they ain't paying them, it must just be whoever the recruiting coordinator is got to connect.
Yeah, and look, my parents, I don't know if you know this, but my parents met at Illinois.
Oh.
They were in grad school at Illinois, and you know, I don't know how many options there were for the both of them, but my parents, that's where they met. They met at Illinois. And so I've been to Champaign, went to Champaign in Urbana one time, and imagine my surprise at 11 years old to find out that, no, this is not anything like Chicago.
I never thought about this before, but I've always heard like it's that the school is in Champaign. How do you get the name Champaign? Because Champaign feels like a city that should be fire.
It does.
But that is not, like, Champagne should be in France somewhere. Yes. I imagine there is a city in France called Champagne. So maybe that guy came here and just was like, this is my city.
But it's spelled different here. It's C-H-A-M-P-A-I-G-N. So actually, it's more like campaign with an H.
Oh, yes. That makes sense.
But like, yeah, nah. So a lot of those places, I'm like, oh, you went there for free. Okay. But you know what? Regular people be going to some of these places for free. And I'm just kind of like, I have no idea how in the world you decided that this is where you make nobody. Maybe nobody told you what college was like. Like when I went to school out there in California, I went to school in the Claremont Colleges, right? Very good schools. I didn't have a bad time in my time there, but it was not Clark Atlanta University. Let me tell you that. I was so confused when I was there and I was talking to the black kids that went there. And a lot of them were like really having a real hard time because, you know, some of these schools are like 2-3% black or whatever it is. And, you know, people ain't necessarily treating you right. And one thing that happens, like, especially if you're a black person who grew up around a lot of white people, but the same white people, they inclined to treat you good because they known you for a long time. They're far more likely to treat me as Bomani, person I've known since third grade, than if they had met me, you know, down the line. But then you go to these schools and it's all these white folks that done met you down the line. And they be treating you like they treat the other black people, which you never see because you only see them when they are hanging out with you and y'all are around each other. You know what I'm saying? And man, I got down there and I was looking at them kids and I was like, so y'all are paying to do this? Like 50 grand and y'all ain't even having fun?
It's an investment, I guess. That's what
they all be taking exchange semesters. And I don't mean like exchange to like other countries. I mean they be going to other schools, like here in the United States. Like, baby, I gotta breathe.
I mean, that's the sad thing about like having to like rebuild that credibility every place you go. That's like one of those small things that you don't account for if you have not experienced it. But you would think that I'm in class with you, that should be enough credibility. But like everywhere you go, you all of a sudden got to like re-earn the right to be treated like everyone else. It's awful.
Yeah. Like for me in grad school, it was wild because I was 21 when I got there and they all grown. And I was, you know, I was kicking it like I was 21, man, you know, like, and I had to do a presentation and I would always win out at that point because they just couldn't believe somebody like me existed. Like imagine seeing me in like one of them satin, the baseball jackets, right? Like my orange Braves jacket and these giant pants and oversized everything else and these two earrings and everything, you know, and I'm like maybe I was smoking a black and mild, maybe I wasn't, and then all of a sudden I'm actually getting in front knowing what I'm talking about. They're like, oh, that's weird, didn't see that coming. I want to ask you this before we go. Justin Fields. So, as I say, this draft industry, it ain't powered by chalk. It's powered by us talking to each other, talking about these dudes. This idea, these dudes ain't change, but we be taking them up and down and act like it matters. Like I said on TV the other day, we act like this is American Idol, as though the popular vote is going to determine who gets taken at any of these picks. Like I always tell people, they're like, yo, I'm studying all these players. So, you know, because of who my team might take, I'm like, whoever your team takes, you're going to lie to yourself and tell yourself that he's good.
That's true.
No matter what happens, you don't need to practice for that. It's probably better that you do that after the fact, right? Because then you can just ignore all the bad stuff on the front end, you know?
Yeah.
But Justin Fields, I didn't see Zach Wilson play very much this year, but I know they played a schedule full of bums. I know that a friend of mine offered me this quote about Justin Fields, okay? He's the best high school quarterback I've ever seen, and I coach Cam Newton. All right, now granted, yeah, it's high school, but still, all right? You hear what I'm saying here. That dude balled out at Ohio State, put up the numbers very similar to Mac Jones's numbers at Alabama. And he's the one that everybody's decided that they're going to take the shots at and knock down and push down in the draft. And I'm looking at it like, okay, but do y'all see this? Like, do you think he's going to be the quarterback he is today for the rest of his life?
It's frustrating and mind-blowing. So I start from this place. It is fair to be critical of any of these players. But, however, you need to be aware of the history and also be aware of your own personal biases and be specific in your analysis. Because that's what's frustrated me about the Justin Fields analysis is it's not specific. It's the same, frankly, racist tropes that have always plagued black quarterbacks. It's like he can't read defenses. He doesn't get through his progressions. He's all athlete. And the tough thing is, maybe it's true, but be specific. Saying the generalities is what upsets me and makes me uncomfortable. Be specific about what you are seeing that is making you feel this way, and don't just fall back on these horrible nonsense tropes that we always use in when we're evaluating black quarterbacks, and just be aware of it. You know it exists. Like if you were alive in covering football, participating in football, you know what sneaky athletic means,
right?
You know these things. We all know them. So don't be dumb about it.
Yeah, like so with work stuff, there's nothing like when somebody asks me or I'm listening to somebody tell me their impressions of like a woman in our business that I either don't know or don't know particularly well. Like I don't have a supremely informed opinion on that person. And somebody can ask me what I've been told. And I could have been told this by people that I generally trust, but I always have to stop at the end and then be like, but it's a bunch of dudes at work talking about a woman in charge. Like you have to understand that as soon as you start hearing all that negativity come out there, it's like, yeah, but you got to remember, this is a bunch of dudes talking about a woman in charge. Like it matters. And that's the thing that always gets me about this is that people will mess around and get the I don't know if he works hard thing. And I don't feel like I got enough people who work at our game who, when that happens, then are like, hey, wait a minute. That sounds like everything else. They look at it like, oh, that guy's cool. I know him. He wouldn't, you know, he's not like that. And I'm like, so who is? Because nobody gets fired for being like that. So who is? And Fields, dog, you that big, you that strong, you got that kind of arm. We figure this out. Like, you can nitpick and take shots at just about anybody. There's room to be nitpicky on Trevor Lawrence. Nobody's really decided that that is what they want to do. Zach Wilson played a season against a bunch of bums. Like, as much as we talking about Trey Lance, and Trey Lance didn't play this year, Zach Wilson played a schedule not terribly different than what Trey Lance would have played at North Dakota State last year in 1AA. We decided not to do that with him. Trey Lance, we just not even talking about him. We just know somebody going to take him, but that hadn't even come up. Fields became the one that we decided we were going to do this with.
Josh Allen, like, yeah. That's the comp you should be making right now. It's like, I don't, coming off of this season, it's interesting to me. Again, like, people are swayed. Like, it kind of goes back to the pro day thing. Like, people are influenced by that, even if they say that they are not. And people are influenced by what they saw in the last season, even if they say that they're not. So I suspect that some of this is like Haskins didn't succeed because Haskins' off-field work ethic. He's also a black quarterback from Ohio State. I suspect that some of that is bleeding into how people are viewing Justin Fields. But why don't they see this big, physical, strong-armed, accurate, fast quarterback and say, oh, maybe he's a toolsy guy, which is what we all heard about Josh Allen, and maybe we can make him into something like that if we surround him with the right players. It's confusing to me where they get these comps from, and why aren't they doing the same thing to Mac Jones, where it's like, all right, it's clear that Tua, or at least last year, he wasn't the quarterback that we expected him to be, and maybe he was being bolstered by being on a team full of All-Americans. And somehow we're watching Mac Jones climb when the mock drafts have five dudes going in the first round from Alabama, and none of them are Mac Jones. Like, we aren't doing the same. It seems so clear to me that these players aren't playing on the same field as far as the way that we're analyzing them.
Yeah, and I mean, don't y'all want to be right? Like, don't y'all want to be good at y'all's jobs? Like, do you not want to get this? I think the Josh Allen point was great, because the worst of Josh Allen film when he was in college is some of the worst that I've ever seen of anybody, absolutely, whether they were good or bad. Like, the worst of Josh Allen was so bad that you knew the other stuff had to be good, because otherwise there's no way you would put that guy on the field.
Right.
On what the worst was. Now, obviously, he's gotten a lot better. We don't need that drama right now, you know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. You're right. That would, to me, be the Josh Allen comparison, because you want to talk about a guy that demonstrated no ability to read a damn defense. Honestly, don't look that great at it now. He's just got time and he's giant. If that was a white dude, you're right. Josh Allen would wind up being the comp. In fact, it would be, he is a more polished Josh Allen. And people were trying to talk themselves into Josh Allen. I mean, people were matter of fact during that college football season that Josh Allen would be the number one overall pick. Like, he was really thought of in that way. We do this every year. We fall for it every year. Like, people just like riding the draft roller coaster, even though we know it's some nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, that leads me to another point that I'm right about and I'm enjoying while everyone else is wrong, is the situation and the context matters more than the player, especially at quarterback. If you look at the last several years, and it's probably true for the entire history of the NFL draft, but I've been looking at the last few years, the quarterbacks who enter the league and have success and then go on to have long careers are all quarterbacks who are drafted into good situations. That matters more than anything else. All these first round draft picks are talented as hell. You don't get into the first round of NFL without having some talent. The ones who go on to have a ton of success, even the ones who go on to have a little bit of success, it's about the situation. Like Carson Wentz, great situation. Dak Prescott, great situation. Patrick Mahomes, great situation. Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady. Any quarterback that you are looking at who has had a good season or multiple good seasons, Josh freaking Allen. Like, you look at that, like, that is what's more determinative than anything else. And while I'm on these shows and I'm listening to everybody saying, well, this guy could change your franchise, Zach Wilson's going to change your franchise. No, he not. Y'all better protect him, play good defense, and get open. And then he'll change your franchise. Like, that's let's be real. That's what's happening. The only difference that you really want, or that you're looking for and you're hoping you get, there's no way to predict it, is like the special. When the play breaks down, when the team across from you has the right game plan and your stuff is not working. And that's what confuses me about the Mac Jones selection over Justin Fields, is because I'm pretty sure that everyone would say, the play broke down, who do I want playing quarterback? Everybody's going to say Justin Fields.
Yo, here's the thing that's going on with Mac Jones. We're bumping up on our time, but I tell you, this is what it is with Mac Jones. And it's going to take a while for people to shake this out of their systems, right? But people for so long trained themselves to believe that as a quarterback, being able to do more things made you worse, right? Like, it's almost like they operating on this idea that if you can't hear, that your sense of sight is going to be bananas because it all gets focused in one direction. And so they're like, well, since Mac Jones is slow, that makes him even better. You know, he's had to put more time in working on this. And it's like, yeah, people put in time working on jump shots. Some people just can't shoot. Like, he was out there throwing to wide open dudes. No shade. He seemed to be good, whatever it is. But all these guys I've ever seen in college where everything was right around them, the Matt Leinarts of the world, whole lot of Miami guys, none of them turned out to be good. Not really, right? Like, what we saw was not truly an indicator. And I thought when he was in college, I was like, you guys are treating him like he's a walk-on, and he's not. He's a four-star recruit. But four-star recruit is not an NFL necessarily player. And so maybe you take him in the first round because you think he'll do everything you ask him to do and everything will be cool. But do you take him over Justin Fields? Let me tell you who wouldn't have taken him over Justin Fields. Nick Saban.
Absolutely right. And like, you would think that Kyle Shanahan would remember what happened in those two Super Bowls, that he was a coordinator and head coach in. What happened was the quarterbacks on the other side of the field walked on water. And I understand that Brady is not an athletic guy, but he did exceptional things that we have no reason to believe that Mac Jones can do. And also, Brady was a sixth-round draft pick. Like, Patrick Mahomes was crazy.
Yes.
And I would think I would leave that game, like, let me find one of them. And that ain't Mac Jones, man. Like, it's no way to look at it and say that's Mac Jones.
But don't forget this. Kirby Smart said, our guy is Jake Fromm.
Yeah, that hurts.
And
that hurts.
Hold on. Let Justin Fields go. Then Jake Fromm left as a junior because he knew his brand of mediocre was not going to improve by staying another year in college. And so he dipped off and got drafted in the fifth round. And then they got stuck out there with Stetson Bennett, the 28th, or whichever one, whatever the number was on the back end of that. And it's just like, you looked at these guys, like we had this thing at Texas 20 years ago, the Chris Sims, Major Applewhite situation, yep. Which at the time became like a real populist sort of thing. And it was about so much. But in the end, Mack Brown did the most daring thing he's ever done, which is look at his former conference player of the year and be like, you got to seal him, buddy. This guy, he may have one, but it is higher than yours. We're going to see where it goes with him. That's what you got to do. It's what the Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence thing at Clemson. Like, you look at a guy and you're like, nah, man, we got to go with this one. Georgia looked at Justin Fields and was like, no, we're going to go with elite Jake Fromm. That's why he got that gun for an arm, because he's elite. Anyway, he did that. But this is the same thing. The only way that you could ever convince yourself that Jake Fromm is better than Justin Fields is if you make yourself believe that there's something wrong with being fast, strong, and big. And accurate and having it. Oh, man, they blew it.
Imagine this situation. Possibly the best offensive line in the league. Possibly the best offensive coordinator in the league. Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuels, George Kittle, Raheem Mostert. And then you put Justin Fields back there.
That's all I'm saying.
Mac Jones? And Mac Jones is going to ball in that offense, too. And that's the bad part, is he going to ball out in that offense because that offense is set up for somebody to walk in and succeed. But I promise you this. It will be so much better with Justin Fields. All right.
That's Dominique Foxworth. Check him out, undefeated.com. Highly questionable. Get up. First take. You just everywhere, man. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassain and Tony Colatiude handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, fellas. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Mac Jones?
What?
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.